Because boundary, as I mentioned in the part two episode with Jewel Shore, are not always the way that I like to solve problems, and they're not even the first way that I try to solve problems. Welcome to Making Polyamory Work. Hi, I'm Libby Sinback, and I want to thank you for being with me today. I am a queer polyamorous mom and an integrative relationship transformation guide, and I am committed through my work to helping people who live and love outside the status quo have extraordinary relationships, because relationships are at the core of our well-being as humans. I think love is why we're here and how we heal. I'm wrapping up this little mini series on boundaries. It's not the last time I'll talk about boundaries, but I think for now I'm going to move on to other topics, which I'm excited about. But I wanted to wrap up this little mini series by talking about when I wouldn't use a boundary if something was happening in my relationships that didn't feel okay to me. Because boundary, as I mentioned in the part two episode with Jewel Shore, are not always the way that I like to solve problems, and they're not even the first way that I try to solve problems. Now, before I dive into these, I just want to say this is how I do it. This is not like researched back, scientifically proven the best way to do it. It's just what I figured out for myself, and I think different people are going to want to do it differently. Some people might actually have the hierarchy go in reverse order for them than the way that I go. But I do have a hierarchy of how I prefer to solve problems, and it goes like this. The top tier, my first choice, is to co-create. So what do I mean by co-create? I mean that my top way that I like to solve problems is to come into a conversation with the problem, without a solution, but just with the problem. And then I want to be able to share what's going on for me, have the other person share what's going on for them, and for us to come together and figure out a solution that we both are happy with. Now, that way, it really is my top way. But not only is it not always possible, because the person that I'm speaking to just isn't up for that kind of thing, but it doesn't always make sense for that to be how we address a problem, because sometimes it's just not that complicated, or we just don't have time and we need to move quickly, or the other person really just doesn't care very much about it, and in which case they're just okay with having a request. Or maybe one person has more time to co-create and the other person really doesn't have the time to really think about what they want or what's important to them or discuss it or hash it out. And what they really want is just to say yes or no to something. So, but it is, co-creation really is my favorite way. I really like to put what's happening with me on the table alongside what's happening for you and to work through a very collaborative solution. So what would that look like in practice? Let's say one of my partners keeps coming home late when they are out and it's making me feel stressed out and concerned about them. And so that's my problem that I'm having, but I don't really know everything about what's going on for my partner and why they're showing up late. And so what I want to have is a collaborative conversation about it first. Like, I want to say, hey, this is what's going on for me. Hey, what's going on for you? How can we move forward and have maybe a strategy for how, like, my feelings about you running late can be addressed while also, you know, what your needs around flexibility around time might be. The benefit of co-creation is that whatever thing happens next, whatever solution there is, both of you sort of have skin in the game on it. And also, usually what I might do is like a direct request, which is the thing I'll get to in a minute, might not be as good a solution because I'm missing half of the equation of what's going on. And so it can be really helpful to have that co-creation conversation without having like a request on the table that you need to negotiate. But instead, it's just like, I have this problem, you have this problem. What are our problems? How can we work with what we have? So that's my first and most favorite way. being said, that way is also a time-consuming way to address problems. It's also resource-intensive. And it's also more intimate because you're in a place of vulnerability. You aren't showing up just asking for a yes or a no or proposing a solution. Instead, you're showing up going, I have a problem and I want to be in the messy middle with you. And not everybody's going to be up for that. I want to say like intimacy, honestly. So there are all kinds of reasons why you might not go for co-creation. So then the next level down would be direct request. Direct request sounds like just what it sounds like. I'm making a direct request. So what happens here is I have thought about the problem and I have thought about a possible solution that would work for me. Maybe it's something that I know has worked for me in the past. Maybe it's even a request I generally have of people that I'm close to. Either way, the request is an ask of someone else to do something differently than what they're doing. An example in the case of my partner always being late, my request might be something like, hey, would you please be on time? Now, if that feels like maybe just an impossible request, because obviously if they were going to be on time, they might already be being on time because they know it's important to me. But so what I might ask instead is, hey, if you're running late, send me a text just so that I know that you're on your way so that I don't wonder where you are or feel like you're not thinking of me and how I'm waiting on you. And then the person can say yes or no to that request. Here are some important things about requests. If they're a request, they need to be something that the person can say no to. If this request is non-negotiable and the only acceptable answer is yes, it's not a request, it's a demand. And a lot of adults really don't respond well to demands, probably because it comes across as entitled, maybe even as controlling. But it's important to note that when you are making a demand, you are not really in the sweet spot when it comes to creating consent with your partner. Another thing that is important with a direct request is to make sure that it's realistic, that it's something that the person can actually do. I mean, not that it's actually not on you, but the person who's saying yes or no to really know that if that request is realistic to do. But it's also on you to like make sure you're looking at your own intention and really thinking carefully about what you're hoping to achieve by making this request. And then again, also make sure you check with yourself and make sure that no is an acceptable answer and that negotiation is possible. I think that's really important because I don't think a request is a request if you aren't open to any pushback, if you aren't open to any flexing. I just don't think it's really a request. Again, it doesn't mean you have to agree to flex. It might mean that somebody offers you a compromise on your request and it's not what you want. And so it's a compromise isn't going to be good enough. And it is okay to say like to counter and say no. But if it's like unacceptable to push back and make a counter offer, that's where you're probably in some controlling territory. I also just want to acknowledge, of course, making requests is a little vulnerable and uncomfortable, maybe not as vulnerable and messy as the like co-creation strategy, but there is vulnerability in having to formulate what you really want and then put it out to someone that presumably cares about you and give them the opportunity to say yes or no, and then deal with what the feelings might be that come up for you if the answer is a no or if it's a yes. Like, getting a yes can sometimes be as uncomfortable or more uncomfortable than is getting a no in a request, particularly if you're someone who feels really vulnerable receiving things, who feels like they have to earn their sense of worthiness and worthiness of love, et cetera. Or if you have ever been in a situation where you received something from someone and then it ended up costing you a lot or felt ultimately not very safe. Receiving can be hard too. I do find that request is probably one of the most common ways that I get what I need. I don't always get my request agreed to, but I do get the opportunity to think about what I really need and reflect on that and then have a really good clarifying conversation, hopefully, with the person I'm making the request of. And requests are really useful and easy if it's like a clear, easy yes or no question. If it's really important to one of you, but it's not really important to the other one. And so the other one is just not going to probably do all that self-reflection part to figure out what they want. And so it's kind of on you to then figure out what you want and then make the request. But again, requests can also be collaborative in that you can make a request. The person has to then sit with whether they're a yes or a no. And then if they're a no, then they might be a no, but how about this? And like sort of making a counter offer. So then you can kind of veer into like co-creation. But you know, the difference between a request and co-creation is that you've spent some time thinking about the solution and you really are kind of solutions focused rather than in the mess of like being in the problem together. Okay, last one. Boundaries. When do I prefer to use boundaries? So pretty much universally, I'm going to try either a direct request or co-creation, sometimes both, with someone before I'm going to go to boundaries. And again, that's because for me, I value collaboration and connection really, really highly. I don't like acting unilaterally, and boundaries are unilateral. A boundary is about your behavior exclusively, and boundaries are about a clear line between what is and is not okay for you. So if co-creation and or direct requests just have not worked, so the other person is unable to participate in helping me make the change that I would like to see happen, then I'm going to move to boundaries. And if you haven't listened to last week's episode, 6 Steps to Setting Boundaries with Julianne Taylor Shore, just pause here and just go listen to that episode because it goes over the 6 steps of how to set a boundary, how to decide why you would set it, what action you would take to assert it, thinking about how the other person's going to respond when you share this with them, how you're going to feel about their response, and then making a care plan for yourself, and then restating the boundary, imagining some pushback. Now, I want to be clear, I have used boundaries with every single person in my life. But where I decide to set a boundary is where I know for sure I can't count on the other person to do what I need. So using our example of the partner who comes home late, let's say we sat down and we tried to co-create a plan together and that didn't work. He still kept showing up late. And then I made a direct request of him. Hey, can you text me when you're going to be late so that I don't worry, or let me know to go to bed if you're going to be late so that I don't wait up for you. And even that has not been working. There have been multiple nights where I have stayed up waiting for him and he hasn't texted me, and I just get angrier and angrier and I'm tired of it. Then where you might move is to boundaries, where you might think to yourself, okay, my partner, I clearly just can't count on them to do what I need them to do in order for me to be okay. So then how do I make sure that I feel okay? So that I don't keep experiencing this. So to start going through Jules's 6 steps, step one would be why? Why would I set a boundary to protect myself from this experience? So just getting really clear, you know, I don't want to be pissed off at my partner. I don't want to be in the situation where I'm worrying about them. I want to make sure that my time is valued and that I'm using it effectively, and sitting around waiting feels really terrible. So you think like, is that a big enough why? Yeah, like me feeling happy with how I'm spending my time, and also me not being pissed off and resentful towards my partner are like really big reasons to have this boundary. Then the second step is going to be, what is the action that I'm going to take to protect myself from the experience that I don't want to have? And this one is where it gets tricky, because we've tried requests, we've tried asking for the other person to do something differently. And so now it's on us. What can we do that's fully in our control to protect ourselves from this experience? I mean, one thing you could do is you could say, you know, if you're more than 5 minutes past the time you said you were going to come home, I'm either going to go to bed or I'm going to get engaged in something else, or I'm going to leave. But I'm just going to like move on with my day and not wait for you. Wait, and we may not get a chance to reconnect when you get home. But maybe that's not even a good enough boundary, because that's sort of a reaction that you're going to have to the thing happening that you don't want to have happen. So what is it that might protect you from that? So just as an example, you might say, when you're going out on dates, I'm just going to make sure I'm not home so that I don't know what time you got home. Or when you go out on dates, I'm going to have, you know, plans. I'm going to have people over while you're gone, or I'm going to have a set bedtime that I'm going to adhere to every night, no matter what. And I'm going to follow a bedtime routine to make sure that that happens. You get the idea. This would be more, here's how I'm going to take care of myself so that this thing that you cannot stop me from experiencing, I can still figure out how to stop me from experiencing it. And I just want to say, like, sometimes I will communicate a boundary, like let the person know what I'm going to do. And sometimes I don't. Sometimes I don't communicate the boundary because it's really not necessary. And sometimes if I communicate a boundary, somebody is going to think that there's a request in there. And so they might be taking charge of managing it when I don't want them to. Because that is sometimes the thing. Like, sometimes what you really want is you really don't want to be in that collaboration or that negotiation. You don't want to be in a position of imposing on someone. And there are all kinds of reasons why you might not want to do that, why it just feels better to make a unilateral decision. Maybe you've had a rough go of trying to collaborate with this person. Maybe you don't trust them to like agree to a request and then actually follow through. Or maybe, as I mentioned earlier, you've tried direct request, you've tried collaboration, and neither of those have worked. And so the only thing you have left is either like tolerating and putting up with the thing, which may be what you end up doing. Maybe that's the right thing, or setting a boundary and creating protection for yourself. And again, there's a whole lot more I have to say about boundaries, both that I've said in previous episodes and also in future episodes. I'm going to talk more about like protective boundary and containing boundary, et cetera. But either way, when you are creating the thing that you're going to do, it's really important to look at your intention, look at your why, because as I said in a previous episode, it can be really easy sometimes for a boundary to become something that's more like an attempt at control. And it can be very easy to use the language of boundaries when what you're really doing is trying to change someone else's feelings, thoughts, or behavior without creating an agreement around it. But I will just add that oftentimes, even when you are setting a boundary that is purely to protect yourself and is wholly within your control, it's not a request in disguise kind of thing, that can sometimes feel hard or mean or, you know, rigid or what have you. And as came up in the conversation with Jules and I, there is no boundary setting without disappointment. And that's because you're doing this alone. You're making this decision that negotiation, request, co-creation, they don't work. And so now you just have to take action to protect yourself. So there's going to be a little bit, I think, of sadness, of disappointment, a little micro grief that can happen for you in those moments where you're setting a boundary. It doesn't always feel good. So anyway, there you have it. That's my hierarchy. So again, I go from co-creation to request and then to boundaries if neither of those work. Those are in order of preference, although sometimes it makes more sense to make a request or more sense to make a boundary or more sense to do a co-creation, depending on the circumstance and depending on the person. You know, like I'm much more likely to set boundaries that I don't even say out loud with people that I don't know or that I don't know very well. Whereas if it's somebody that I have a closer relationship with, yeah, I'm usually going to try to do the co-creation thing. If you want to hear more about boundaries, you can go back to the previous episodes of this show that have come out, maybe in the past few weeks. There are a bunch of them about boundaries, including two great interviews with Julie and Taylor Shore. What I hope you take away from today is that while I love, 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 love boundaries, and I think they're wonderful, and I think the more we can master them, the happier we can be in our relationships, boundaries are not the only thing you need to do in order to address difficult things. Requests and co-creation, negotiation, pushback, being in that dance together, they're all really good strategies to address things when something isn't feeling good. It's so important to be able to advocate for what you need in your relationships. And so I hope these tools will help you do that in the future. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you have any thoughts about what I've said today or a question for the show, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on Instagram as ThatPolyamMom, or you can go to the show's website, makingpolyamorywork.com, and submit a question there. I'll also say that if you're loving my podcasts, but you are looking for more support, I do this for a living. I am an integrative relationship guide. So I help individuals, couples, and groups have amazing relationships. You can find out more about my offerings on my website. If you love this podcast, please share it with your friends, your networks, your Facebook groups, your coworkers, your family, etc. And make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Also, if you listen on iTunes, I always love getting reviews. It literally makes my day. And it'll also help more people find the show. Making Polyamory Work is created by me, Libby Sinback. It is edited by Finn of the Normalizing Non-Monogamy podcast and hosted on the Spotify podcasts platform. Vanda Leone manages the website and posts the transcripts. Thank you, everyone, and see you next time.